Good afternoon and welcome aboard. Happy Wednesday to you. John McGinnis with you, News Radio KPK. Hope you're having a delightful day. Busy day today. We're going to have an action-packed program this afternoon. Coming up later on in the program, we'll have in studio John Cox, the leading GOP candidate for governor of the state of California. We'll find out about his platform, get more information, get updated from him, drill down on some of the issues, particular issues that are hot topics in the state of California right now, to include immigration and the high-speed rail system. Where's that going to go? What are his thoughts on that? So that's coming up after the bottom of the hour news. We also have a little bit of an update, I suppose, and I'm getting queries from people about the developments in Austin, Texas, which, of course, I have no personal knowledge of. However, I can give you my best guess as to why the area, the broad area around where the bomber lived and took his life, has been evacuated, because my sense is it's they're concerned, with good reason, that it's a very volatile situation still, because you have a person who had been making explosive devices and been doing it extensively, and had the ingredients for those devices in his home, which he shared with roommates, by the way. And therefore, as you go through the process of collecting evidence, and of course, this guy's not going to be prosecuted for it criminally, but that by no means suggests that it doesn't need to be a painstaking process in which the evidence is methodically preserved and collected and prepared for litigation still, because the potential for civil litigation to arise out of this. Plus, this regrettably will be not the last bomber who will impose terror on a community in this country. And so by studying the backgrounds and learning with intimate detail exactly what this guy has done, which remains, at least public knowledge, a major mystery at this point in terms of what his motive was, it's that important to learn exactly what was going on. And then also to help people who are charged with the responsibility of rendering suspicious devices safe, to have a chance to see what people are doing, what the current state of affairs is with regard to bomb making. And this guy, by the way, 23 years of age, unemployed, who had purchased his bomb making materials apparently at a local Home Depot. That's the background on him. They had information on him as a suspect. They actually obtained video of him sending FedEx packages. And of course, he had the presence of mind to conceal his identity, or to seek to conceal his identity, by sporting a blonde wig and a ball cap when he went into the FedEx facility. But a warrant was actually obtained for his arrest. And when they went to confront him, he fled in a car. There was a short pursuit. He went into a ditch. And as SWAT officers were preparing to approach him and take him into custody, he detonated yet another bomb. So it looks, I think it's pretty reliable at this point that this is the guy, but who may have been working with him still needs to be addressed. And of course, the motivation for what he did, how in the world does somebody in 23 years of life get so angry with people they want to kill total strangers in this fashion? It's a it's a mystery, but it doesn't look, I mean, if you look at his photograph, he looks like a harmless person. Not that there's a particular look of a bomber. We all got used to seeing Ted Kaczynski in his appearance, but and he had issues, of course, over the years, and it was his own manifesto when it was published that finally caused his brother and apparently his sister-in-law to recognize the overwhelming likelihood that, based upon the details of that manifesto, that the Unabomber was, in fact, Ted Kaczynski. This one, I think through the miracle of electronic technology and evidence that was amassed and processed very, very quickly with a task force. It looks as though the Austin police did an incredibly good job, and they worked with their partners from the ATF and FBI, and it really truly looks as though this was an example of success, given some of the criticism of the FBI, certainly in recent months. This is refreshing, and of course the system-wide failure of the justice system and education in Parkland, Florida, a month ago. It's good to see that when you see the system work as it's supposed to, and good, competent, dedicated people stepped up and did the right thing and caused this to be brought to a timely conclusion. Of course, unfortunately, without complete and total success insofar as loss of life did occur. Ultimately, though, he applied the same violent destruction of life to himself that he had to others. And, of course, his roommates are being detained, not as criminal suspects at this point, but as they have incredibly important intelligence information that the bomb techs, the EOD personnel, will want to know all about in terms of things he had been doing, what he had been acquiring, where he had been storing things. Those are all critical tidbits of information that in the hands of the right people can help minimize the likelihood of any kind of secondary problem from it. So there's that. Now, in other news, this is interesting because this has come up in California before. The California legislature has actually advanced this notion in the past. Now, a Brooklyn lawmaker wants to make it illegal for bosses to require their employees respond to emails or text messages after normal work hours. Under Councilman Rafael Espinal's proposed right to disconnect legislation, private employers with at least 10 workers would also be prohibited from retaliating against employees for not responding to those electronic communications once they clock out for the day. Mr. Espinal says, after leaving the office, many of us are glued to our phones, refreshing our Instagram feeds, but oftentimes we are also keeping up with our work and bosses. While technology has increased access to people and ideas, it's also made it possible for employers and employees to be on call 24/7. We need to establish clear boundaries for employees so they can maintain a healthy work-life balance and live without fear of retaliation for not answering work communications after work hours. So that is his goal, is to make that a matter of law throughout the entirety, all five boroughs of the city of New York. And I can see that that it will have some appeal to certain folks. I understand it. It seems welcome that the boss will be told you shall not, under penalty of law, communicate with employees when they're off work. And, of course, one of the things that pops into my mind is you have a kind of a broad range of possibilities that may prompt an employer to reach out to somebody after normal work hours. It may be a specific task that under normal circumstances and proper compensation should result in additional work done for additional compensation. I think that's fair. But it may also be very minimal questions about something, where a file was stored, where maybe if keys were taken home or keys were misplaced, to inquire of someone after hours about something like that, I think is highly problematic. The solution to it, I believe, is to shed light on it and encourage employers to recognize the fact that if they want their workforce to be happy, healthy, well-adjusted, and inclined to appreciate the work environment, impose your own limits on the extent to which you bother them off-duty. And in many cases, these relationships have a quasi-personal component to them. Where do you draw the line? Where is there just something that has popped up and you know that that a particular employee in an organization may have the answer to a question that would not be intrusive or cumbersome at all for them to answer that question, then why should you have a law imposed by government that limits the extent to which that conversation or that communication can take place? So there may be, I think, a better solution, which is so oftentimes the case through the free enterprise system. Let employers establish themselves as good employers, as the people for whom others want to work, by being mindful and considerate of the well-being of their employees, recognizing the benefit to the organization as well, not just the employees, and treating people accordingly, versus limiting by law, by a government edict, that you shall not have these conversations if it involves after hours, off-duty, non-compensated time. That's the poll question. You'll find it on the John McGinnis page at KFBK.com. It's also the topic for conversation on the air at 916-921-1530 or 800-834-1530. Other topics want to kick around. We looked at one very, very tiny Orange County city has now taken the course of action of separating themselves from the state of California insofar as immigration law. They're not part of the sanctuary state. It will inevitably result in litigation. I think that's a given. Now, one member of the Orange County Board of Supervisors wants to take that same attitude and philosophy countywide in Orange County, which I think could be very, very interesting. The county of Orange certainly has a greater degree of applicability in terms of sanctuary law and SB 54 in particular, where the city of Los Alamitos had very, very minimal impact as a result of it. But we'll kick those around as time permits as well throughout the program. Much more conversation coming up after this. Don't go away.
Sacramento's news, traffic, and weather at the top and bottom of every hour. News Radio KFBK.
Welcome back. Thanks for staying on board, John, to get us with you on News Radio KFDK. A couple of topics in the hopper, talking about prohibiting employers from contacting employees when they're not being compensated as a matter of law. Good manners and common decency, I think, would control that to a great extent. But making it a matter of law for which there'd be consequences, penal consequences prescribed, I think is another story. And then, of course, talking about the Austin bomber. So a couple of topics in the hopper there. Let's get to those calls. 916-921-1530, 800-834-1530. Let's check in with Chris in Marysville. Chris, good afternoon, sir. Welcome to the conversation. Thank you for holding on.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure.
So with all this California laws in going across the U.S. with banning and outlawing AR-15s and assault rifles.
Yeah.
Why don't we start banning, cardboard boxes and batteries and, all the materials used to make these bombs?
Points well taken. I don't know what exactly was used in this particular series of bombings. I understand there's a very sophisticated, obscure battery that was used. I know in the past, the Oklahoma City bomber used fertilizer. So, yeah, the argument could be made. Of course, this does tend to illustrate that the problem with people who have violent, murderous ideology is the fact that they harbor that violent, murderous ideology. It's not the fact that implements exist that they can use for that purpose.
Exactly. I mean, you're talking about an instrument that can do far more, detrimentous and harm to people than just a simple assault rifle, and every aspect of that item is outlawed and against the law, and yet somebody found a way to hurt somebody with it, so it just proves that it's people, not the item.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely correct. And of course, reasonable restrictions, reasonable measures, those persons who have taken themselves out of firearm ownership by their behavior, by their conduct, felony misconduct, mental health issues, certain kinds of mental health issues, violent-based, then that's a group of people that probably there should be reasonable restrictions. But in general, if you look at the propensity for somebody to kill folks, that's the problem. And I think focusing on anything else weakens the potential, the likelihood of actually finding a resolution to it. Look at the core problem that's causing people to do this, and I think that's where you're going to find a greater hope for a solution. Appreciate the call very much, Chris. Let's check in with Jim in Rockland. Jim, good afternoon. Welcome to the conversation.
Thanks, John, and thanks for taking my call on
your
show.
Thanks.
The point that I wanted to make, I touched base with your screener there, was this situation with the use of cell phones or contacting people after hours. So really what's the flip side of that is what has a tendency to irritate me is when I'm in a retail establishment and an employee has a telephone, has a cell phone on the counter, and they're texting back and forth, and it's obviously not with their employer. It's with maybe a family member or a friend.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that just kind of
It does cut both ways, and I know in many organizations, maybe not as many as it was a few years back, but the employer may provide that piece of equipment, that cell phone, which of course has to call it a cell phone now is a misnomer, but may provide that piece of equipment, and it's also authorized for use for personal purposes to some extent. Well, if that's the case, and you can handle something in a very, very brief conversation when you're otherwise off the clock, I think that's reasonable. But it also seems reasonable to me that for people who like to go to plays or movies or engage in activity that requires that their devices be turned off, they should be able to do that. But if it's reasonable, if there's an element of reasonability where you can get a message to somebody without incurring any particular onerous work on them, why not? Why can't that be part of the working relationship in which there's a little bit of willingness to assist, even if it's after hours? But point well taken, Jim. It does cut both ways. I think that's the reality. Let's check in with Pat in Camino. Pat, good afternoon. Welcome to the conversation.
Hi, John. I'm retired from a Southern California, extremely large law enforcement agency. Hmm. And one thing that bothers me a lot is the us releasing secrets-based.
Yeah.
You there?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. Releasing things that we shouldn't. It's the old loose lips sink ships type idea. And one of the things has to do with the battery.
Yeah.
Well, why are we telling everybody how we do things?
Yeah.
And the same goes for the military on occasion. And I know, you know, in the military, we have various vessels, whether they're on the ocean or flying in the sky, that, you know, Jane's fighting ships, et cetera, you're going to find out certain information there.
Yeah.
But certain ways we do things should never, ever be released to the public.
Absolutely. Holdout information is just that for a very good reason. Of course, in this case, there is likely not going to be a criminal prosecution, but there still may be others that were involved. We don't know that yet. So, yeah, the extent to which those things can be held back, especially in the case of a likely criminal prosecution to follow, that's absolutely critical. And nobody in law enforcement should ever apologize for that. And the media, frankly, should understand that and respect it. That, yeah, I used to get that question. Can you tell us what the caliber of the weapon used in the murder was? And I say, of course I can, but I'm not going to, because it's holdout information. Only the crook and the investigators know that at this point. We're going to keep it that way. So, yeah, holdout confidentiality of information is extremely important, and I think it should be honored to the extent possible. Pat, I appreciate the call very much, and thank you for your service, sir. We shall be back with more conversation, including a visit with the leading GOP candidate for governor. That's John Cox. He's here in studio coming up after this. Don't go away.
And center. Living with someone with Alzheimer's or dementia, how it's affecting more families across California. That story, plus traffic and weather together every 10 minutes on the KFBK Morning News tomorrow at 5.
Welcome back. Thanks for staying on board. John DeGuinness with you, News Radio KFBK. Very, very, very pleased and honored to have in studio Mr. John Cox, candidate, leading GOP candidate for governor of the state of California. And by the way, you can catch us on Facebook Live if you're so inclined. You can watch us and see his handsome mug here.
Well, am honored to be with you, John, a former sheriff of this wonderful area. And
well,
your dedication to public service is great, and I appreciate the opportunity to sit down and have a conversation.
The pleasure is mine. There's a whole host of topics that I think beg for your position and some clarification, and I will let's start out with immigration. Okay,
yeah.
and obviously the U.S. Attorney General has now sued the state of California because of the so-called sanctuary state initiative, the status that we have here. Very interesting that the city of Los Alamitos has taken an affirmative step to back away from that on a 4-1 vote.
Yep.
And the county of Orange is actually considering that. The Board of Supervisors, at least one member thereof, is looking at the possibility of having the entire county of Orange back away from this. So how do you see that? How do you size that up?
I think this is going to be a torrent of communities that basically say, I want my law enforcement to actually do what I pay them to do, and that is enforce the law and protect the communities. And if you're not working with the federal authorities, if you're not working to protect communities, then why am I paying you? Why are my tax dollars going to this purpose? And I think people like Libby Schaff, this mayor of Oakland, who just wanted the fame and the adulation of the far left on, you know, making sure that the raid by ICE was publicized. She did a huge disservice to the law-abiding people of her community, and You know, those are the people, John, that work every day.
Yeah.
Those are the people that live their lives and raise the kids and participate in the community. And I got to believe a lot of them were just incredibly outraged that a public official would do something like that. And I think the Los Alamitos thing is something that's going to build because a lot of public officials, you know, really are sitting back and saying, is this the right thing that we're going to let gang members and other people exist in our communities? I was in Placer County just the other day, and I watched Devin Bell, the sheriff there, talk about a guy that he picked up who was preying on 8-year-old girls. And he was scared to death that he was going to have to put this person back out in the community. Right. At the last minute, he pled guilty and he wasn't released. But, you know, he was going to have to do that without informing ICE. This was an undocumented immigrant who should not have been in our community.
That's what SB 54 calls for. By the way, out of the Oakland, you mentioned the mayor in Oakland, out of that particular raid, people who escaped custody in that go-around because they were notified by the mayor that this raid was forthcoming, three of them have been arrested on criminal charges since that time. One armed robbery, a violent crime, one domestic violence, and I believe one DUI, maybe a couple of domestic violence. So these are people who have a predisposition to commit crimes. Not all, certainly. And I understand the differentiation between those that are an imminent threat to the safety of people around them and those who are merely immigration violators. But let me ask you this.
Well,
if I may.
Yeah.
Do you see a solution to this? Because I believe that you get labeled as a person who is void of compassion
right.
if you take a hard line on immigration. And my sense is that you're not a person who's void of compassion.
My goodness. And, you know, John, this is all about pure politics. It's pure racial politics. It's pure special interest politics. It's pure distraction is what it is. I've been saying on media for the last several weeks that the Democrats are sitting there trying to come up with some way of distracting people from the mess that they've made of California. Yeah. I mean, let's face it. I could just imagine some Democrat consultants sitting around a table saying, wow, over the last 8 years, we've put more people in poverty than ever has been put in poverty in the state of California. We've got people running for their lives from fires that we don't control.
Right.
We have been destroying reservoirs and living with a man-made drought that's starving our farmers and making it so people can't use their toilets, for crying out loud. We've got the highest taxes in the country by far. We're a laughingstock in terms of our business climate. Let's try to figure out something to get people excited about our party in the face of all this mismanagement. So what do they come up with? Sanctuary state.
Yeah.
What's the other thing they come up with? They just appointed an undocumented immigrant to a state post.
Right.
Now, you know, this person may be the most qualified person in the world, but you and I both know that they did this to stick a finger in the eye of law-abiding citizens, get talk radio going, get their voters excited, and it's all distraction.
Nearly 40 million people in the state of California, Hank, you cannot convince me that there are not those who are legally here, by the way,
right,
that wouldn't have been equally or greater suited for that position. That is simply a political move.
We fall for it.
The idea is the functional equivalent of having a membership gym, for example, that you have to join, you have to pay dues to be a member,
right?
Yet you allow somebody to come in and run a portion of it who's not legally there, who hasn't met the criteria to be a part of that organization.
But it's worse than that, because what you're doing it is you're doing it to kind of piss off a segment of the group that you want to do because you want to make sure that they keep you in power.
Right, right.
But what's that all about? That's all about being a craven political machine, which is what we have running this state right now. The good news for all of you listening out there is that there's going to be a change in 2018, and I'm going to be the fortunate one to lead it, let me tell you.
How do you differentiate between DACA and other people in the country illegally? Do you see a different set of circumstances there? You want to treat people differently?
Intelligence would tell you that somebody who was born here to an undocumented immigrant, has never known another country. So the idea of making them go back to another country sounds pretty harsh. On the other hand, by the way, the parents brought them here illegally, or came illegal and had them while they were here. So it's a real tough thing to reward them. I guess I would focus on the realities, and I think that's what President Trump did. The reality is, it's a lot of these people are contributing to the economy. They're going to school. Sure. They're serving in the military. They're good citizens. This country has grown because we like to have people come from other countries right. and become Americans. And these people, you know, these DACA recipients are people that have become Americans right. to the extent. So, but I tell you what, the president is right to get something for it. Border security, merit immigration, the end of this chain migration, e-verify. I'd add e-verify to that. I'm not sure he had that in there, but I would have added e-verify. If I'm going to do something like, you know, legalize a lot of these DACA recipients, I'm darn well going to get something for it that's going to make it so that this problem doesn't keep happening. We got to stop it now.
Yeah, I think the opportunities have been there over the years, and they were not taken advantage of, so perhaps now is the time, or at some point in the not-too-distant future it could work out.
There's a school of thought, John, that says that the Democrats don't want to solve this right. problem because right. it's such a good thing politically for them. It gets their base excited. Right. It gets the media on their side. And again, it's a distraction from the hash they've made of the rest of the state in terms of their management.
Very true. We have, I got a ton more questions for you, but we've got to take care of some other business real quick. Like, can you stick around?
Absolutely.
All right, we'll be back with more conversation with Senator, I almost called you a senator, with John Cox, candidate for the governor of the state of California.
Next governor. Yeah.
There you have it. Coming right back after this. Don't go away.
The KFBK Afternoon News with Kitty O'Neill, helping to get you home informed. News Radio KFBK.
Well, welcome back. Thanks for staying on board. John McGinnis with you. News Radio KFBK. Also in studio is John Cox, who's the leading GOP candidate for the governor of the state of California. You can also follow us on Facebook Live if you're so inclined. And I want to give you a chance to talk about a couple of things, not the least of which is you've picked up a rather impressive endorsement along the lines.
The former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, the architect of the takeover of the House in 94, and which I would submit to you was a major achievement and also a major thing that helped the country tremendously, because he was a break on Bill Clinton and the two of them actually...
They actually was a pretty effective government.
A pretty effective partnership. People look at that and they say, well, gee, you know, there was a check and balance there, and that was a good time for America. But
you worked for Mr. Gingrich at one time, did you not?
No, I didn't work for him. No. I was his finance chairman in California when he was running for president in 2012. And he and I talked many times about California and about the mess even then in 2012. It's gotten far worse since then.
I would think well, his endorsement is of value, but his contribution to the effort is likely very valuable too, right?
He wants to dive in. Yeah. He wants to dive in with both feet, and we're having a conference call next week to start that. And I'm hoping to get him out here, but more importantly, I'm hoping to get the benefit of his advice. I don't think there's anybody in modern politics today that knows more about politics than Newt Gingrich.
Yeah, even people who don't care for him, I think, acknowledge his yes. brilliance. He's a truly a brilliant guy. We talked a little bit about immigration. What about the other thing that's occupying a lot of interest, in my mind at least, because I see it as a gigantic black hole? The high-speed rail.
Oh, please.
What are your thoughts there? By the way, the numbers on that look to me... at this juncture, as though they've risen to about $120 billion.
Which would be one thing if the thing was going to work, and if right. it was going to actually produce some revenue and actually right. help, you know, the transportation issue, which I can't find anybody who really believes that it's going to help. You can fly from San Francisco to Los Angeles in less than an hour, and, you know, you got to go through TSA, and you got to go through all the headaches, but... even with that,
I make the trip from the north to the south of the state probably more than anybody in the world except you.
Okay. So, yeah, I've been there a lot.
And it's not a difficult thing to do. So the market does not seem to exist.
Not only that, there's a lot of new technologies that are coming, like this new one that I've been watching called Hyperloop. That's a vacuum tube. You can, you know. The high-speed rail, John, is a testament to political corruption. And as you know, my campaign is going to be all about getting rid of the corruption in Sacramento. And, you know, the reason it's being built where it's being built is mainly because people out there needed, you know, work. And the congressmen who championed it were, you know, in exchange for their vote for Obamacare, right. they wanted it built in their district. it would have made far more sense to put it down the middle of the five where right. all the overpasses are built. There's tunnels. There's other things. What they're having to do out in the Central Valley there is they have to acquire all kinds of land. There's environmental lawsuits all over the place. The lawyers and the environmental consultants are positively cleaning up. That's one of the big things driving up the cost.
Sure.
Just like it drives up the cost of housing now. Right. I mean, it's driving up the cost of any water work that we want to do. The environmental movement it served a purpose, and it still serves a purpose. I'm an environmentalist. I'm sure you are, too. We all want to breathe clean air. But so much power was turned over to the trial lawyers and to these groups that they impede just about everything. And we've got to strike a balance. We've got to have a risk-reward analysis done on this stuff.
Got to ask you the hard question. You are running for governor in as a conservative in an ultra-blue state. How are you going to get the message out? You start out, I think, with a tremendous challenge from the kind of groupthink that I see existing in the state of California. This is a sad commentary. I'll throw into the question, weave into the question. I think if the electorate were better informed in this state, really, truly more knowledgeable, it would be a completely different landscape in terms of politics. But that's part of what you have to overcome. How's that going to happen?
I think the voters in the state are kind of like the frog in boiling water. I mean, the heat's being turned up on them so darn much that I think they're finally starting to pay attention. They can't afford the house they're in. Right. They are paying through the nose in income, sales, and now gas tax. Right. As you know, I'm the chairman of the effort to repeal the gas tax, which is going to be on the ballot, and I think it's going to be repealed. I think the people are outraged about it. I think they're reaching their boiling point. They know that businesses are leaving. 9,000 businesses have left in the last 7 years. U.S. News just named California the Golden State, 50 out of 50 in quality of life. If you look at other states like Maryland, which has a 20%, you know, Republican registration, Larry Hogan is a conservative Republican, and he's the governor of Maryland.
Yeah.
And he's the most popular governor in the country, by the way.
Yeah.
So I think there's ample belief that this is definitely possible.
Well, you got to have hope. And I think being here and on programs like this throughout the state is a good way to get your message out. I appreciate you taking your time out
to be
here. John Cox, candidate for governor of the state of California. Thank you very, very much, sir, for being here. And I hope to see you again.
Thank you, John. Appreciate the opportunity.
We'll have you back. All right. Hey, that's it for me. As you can tell by the sound of music, but stick around for the lovely and talented Kitty O'Neill. She's coming up next with the afternoon news. I'll see you tomorrow. Have a great one. So long.